What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends, Larry Rifkin and John Krawczyk. And John and I, we both love animals. I think John does even better on that score because he continually has 20 dogs in his house. That's why it's impossible to talk with them over the telephone. They're all, unless that's something else going on there that I don't know. But the question is, on the table today on America Trends, John, is animal rights the next frontier? Is that what we're going to be really discussing about our treatment of animals?
Well, I think it's terrible the way some people treat animals. I mean, it's just awful. The farm animals, you keep hearing about dogs being left to starve. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, we've seen a few cases of that in our own progressive state lately. And people really do get very upset about it. On the other hand, they're talking about it while they're eating a pig or a goat or a cow. So that's where we're headed here, John, which is the issue of animal welfare. And I think we all really are sympathetic. Remember the book that we did years ago? Some we love, some we hate, some we eat. And that's our really interesting dynamic in terms of our relationship with animals, because we do look at them in a stratified way.
We do.
So the issue that we're talking about here is going from animal welfare, where we want all of our domesticated animals that we love treated almost as if they're humans today in our families, to the issue of animal rights. What about species? They're living beings along with us. So should we feel any badly toward those who are being mistreated in a slaughterhouse simply because they're not domesticated and we don't see the process?
Well, I think we're so far disconnected from our food that we just think it appears.
Where did these pigs come from? Aisle 4. It's really interesting. The other day, you know, I do a lot of work on the treadmill, and I watch a lot of different series. So, folks, I'm going to give you a recommendation. It's a pretty good series. It's called Sweet Bitter, and it's all about a woman from the Midwest who comes to New York, and she ends up as a waitress in a very fancy restaurant, a restaurant where you really have to know a lot about food and wine, and so she's learning about it and all the dynamics of all the people working in this restaurant. Restaurants, to me, by the way, John, are one of the most incredible ecosystems in the world. How they can get everything right on time, make it fresh, make it taste so good, be that coordinated every day
Keep
of the
track
week.
Of it.
No, really, it's remarkable, isn't
right.
it? Really. And we take it so much for granted. Get me that whatever, and I want it in 5 minutes, and all of a sudden it's there. It's remarkable. So she works in this restaurant, and I hadn't watched the new season of Sweet Bitter, but I turned to it the other day while I was on the treadmill, and there they are, the opening for the second season, and they go out to a farm, and they bring in a pig because he got them all up early in the morning. He wanted them to understand the process. If they're going to be at the end point of the process, he wanted them, the manager, to understand the beginning.
Wow.
So the pig comes in and obviously trusts the farmer, and all of a sudden the farmer kills the pig, and you see it bleed out on television. I mean, it's pretty powerful. And virtually everyone from the restaurant runs out of the barn, except this young girl from the Midwest, and she stayed. I don't know if she was traumatized or just fascinated that
maybe
this is
Midwest,
the way.
Maybe she had experience.
Well, no, I don't think she really did.
No,
but the point is that if we really understood the origins of that which ends up on our plates, how would we feel about it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We have that big disconnect here, even where our fruits and vegetables come from.
Exactly.
We have no clue.
Exactly. So instead of saying, bringing home the bacon, we want you to start saying, bring home the bagels. because the bacon started off in a very lively sense as part of the species that surround us. And I think if we were asked whether we would actually do the deed that got them ultimately to our table, we would say no.
Right. I think you're right.
So we talk about all of these issues.
We'd all be vegetable farmers.
Right. That's right. And we'd all be vegans, which we should be, John. But you and I have talked about that for a while as well. We're working on it. Trust me, we're working on it, but it's hard. Amy Jean Davis, an animal advocate, founder of LA Animal Save, and spokesperson for the Save movement, is with us today on America Trends. And she's going to open your eyes to a lot of the debate that is going on in America today. And I tell you, I see it happening. I see people going from regular milk to almond milk, even in my own family, my wife. I see people who are, well, not always vegan, but maybe they're only eating fish or chicken.
Well, you know what got
me
with milk?
I see lots of people moving in that direction.
You know what got me with milk is somebody told me one time, they said, you know what milk is? Milk is used to make a 200-pound calf into a 500-pound or a 1,000-pound
really
cow. Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. So, yeah, wow. That gets your attention. I mean, some of these things do. I mean, let me give you something to think about before we even go to our guest on this podcast. We have come a long way, but we have a long way to go. And I think in about 50 years, our relationship to animals and whether, in fact, we can grow through stem cell the beef that we seem to really like in America, I think that's coming. We see where all of these plant-based burgers are starting to take off on the stock market and the like. But think about this. How many fur coats or mink stoles do you see today? Anybody wearing them?
Nobody. Yeah, you're right.
So there's already been a lot of change, and it will continue. And that's why we want to talk about it, because that's what we do on America Trends. So join us now. With us on the line on America Trends is Amy Jean Davis, an animal advocate, founder of the Los Angeles Animal Save, and she's a spokesperson for the Save movement. You know, this whole issue of animal rights and animal welfare, I know they're two different things, but you tell us that there's a whole new movement, particularly from progressives, to deal with animal rights. Help us to understand what some of the issues are that they're beginning to frame for public debate.
The issues, there's so many of them. Of course, there's animal cruelty. There's really no way to use animals for any reason and also respect their rights of any kind. So the animal cruelty is almost incomprehensible. But it's also, animal agriculture is also affecting the environment in one of the biggest ways, depending on the issue, whether it's pollution, greenhouse gas emissions, and you know, water usage, land usage. And also eating animals contributes to most of our top causes of disease and early death. So we're trying to raise awareness for all of these things that animal agriculture is basically affecting in a very negative way.
And I know there's a lot going on social media, and there are people on both sides saying, oh, you know, these folks are such great do-gooders, but we should worry more about humans and less about animals. And, you know, over the years, when you think about it, we have graded our animals in terms of our concern for their welfare. So if they live with us and they're domesticated, we care a whole lot. And we've demonstrated that in many ways. If they don't, and they're really on the menu, we've given very little thought often to how they're raised and procured and prepared for the uses that humans make of them. Are we gaining any level of sensitivity that you see overall in our society about some of these issues?
Absolutely. Definitely. And you can see this by how big of a demand there is from consumers for grass-fed, pasture-raised, cage-free, like these buzzwords that really don't mean very much for the animals and lessening their suffering, but it makes the consumer feel good because deep down, we all care about animals. And the animals themselves, they're all the same in their capacity to suffer. And I think everybody understands that on some level. I can find common ground talking to any non-vegan about animals, because really we know that we shouldn't hurt anyone who has the ability to feel pain. And that's all animals. So we definitely are waking up. Look back just a few years ago, you didn't see these big signs for cage-free eggs. Like, you see it everywhere at grocery stores and restaurants alike. It's a big selling point because we think, oh, these animals lived a happy life before they were killed so I could eat them. So we are waking up, and we just need to keep pushing, because really it doesn't make any sense to care for some animals, like you mentioned, our companion animals, our dogs and cats. We love them. Some people will defend their dogs and cats to the death. How dare you come and, you know, try to hurt my animal? And then we're paying someone else to drop day-old male chicks into a giant grinder because they're not going to lay eggs in the egg industry. So it's so wacky and outrageous that eventually all of these truths will come to the surface, and people will see there really is no good way to use animals for food. It's just there's just no way to do it without immense suffering. So we're going to connect those dots eventually, and I'm hoping that it's very soon. And there's a lot of us out there trying to educate the public, because people, once they know, usually they'll do better once they know.
Well, I recall having an ethicist on from Princeton on a radio program that I did. And I asked him, as we look back at this era in time, what is going to be the most inexplicable thing that we humans have done over a long stretch of time? And he said, take us forward 50 years. He said, eating meat will be the most unexplainable thing humans did in this era. Do you think that will happen? And do you think it will be within 50 years?
Absolutely. I absolutely believe, I couldn't agree more. It will happen within 50 years, and sooner than that. I don't know if you heard, but Beyond Meat went on to the floor of the NASDAQ at a stock exchange yesterday, and they had the most successful IPO since 2008 when the market crashed. And they're the first plant-based company to go on and, you know, do something like this. And so that's a big sign. Burger King is going to launch the Impossible Whopper towards the end of the year nationwide. Del Taco, Carl's Jr. So fast food is picking up plant-based foods. The plant-based foods industry is exploding. Our awareness for our carbon footprint for our food is becoming common knowledge, that it takes so much more resources to create beef than it does to just eat a veggie burger of some kind, or to just eat plants. So all of these things, we're basically creating awareness in all these different ways that they're all going to cause this major snowball. And it will become essentially, you know, unacceptable, socially unacceptable to be eating meat, because it doesn't make any sense. And the more people learn the horrors of factory farming, these mother and father pigs that are living in these crates where they can't turn around ever. And they're just exploited for their bodies to generate more piglets. And these piglets going to slaughter between 4 and 6 months of age, chickens going to slaughter at 2 months of age or earlier. Like, all of these things, once more people know, they're going to be horrified, and we will look back and go, what were we thinking? And we'll see. What was happening was that big industry, big profit, were leading the way on this. They were making all of this money and trying to convince the public that we need to eat meat for protein and drink dairy for calcium. And it was all based on lies, just so that they can make a ton of money off of us. And people don't want to be sick either. They don't, you know, nobody wants to lose their dad at 60 years old to a heart attack, and they don't have to. These diseases don't have to happen. And when we eat a whole foods plant-based diet, our risk for our number one killer, heart disease, is like less than 4%. So all of these things going on all at the same time right now, it's very exciting in the animal rights movement, because I think it will happen sooner than 50 years.
Well, let me ask you,
we're living in the age of information.
If we go back and we look at discrimination as a result of race or sex or, your sexual orientation. And we look at the changes that have been so sweeping over, you know, relatively short periods of time. This whole idea of speciesism, where we have been able to discriminate against animals. I mean, where, in a sense, does that go in relation to some of these other concerns that we have addressed as a society? How far along are we along that continuum, going from even animal welfare to giving them full rights to be amongst us because they're living, breathing things, and not to be used for our own purposes because of our intellect and ability to dominate them?
Well, speciesism is an ism just like the other ones you mentioned. And what it does, it evaluates a species based on their benefit towards humans, whether alive or dead. And so we're placing value on a species based on what we perceive the benefit to us is. And so it's no different than the other isms where a group of humans decided the value of another group of beings. With speciesism, it just happens to be non-human animals. But these non-human animals do deserve rights. They don't deserve to be the property of anyone else. They exist for their own reasons. So it is the same thing where we have this perspective problem. I like to call it the human supremacy perspective disorder, because we look at animals and think, I want you for this, I want you for that, and we do it because we have the power to do it. But that animal exists for its own reasons. It's violating their basic natural rights to just exist, not as property.
But if somebody says, well, they are here, you're right, for a reason, and just as we wouldn't think of eating a horse, in certain cultures they think about eating dogs, somebody in our culture, I mean, you can't go anywhere and not see a Texas Roadhouse or a, you know, steakhouse here or there. I mean, people have generally been comfortable with the notion that cows are meant ultimately to provide certain products for us, and in the process some of them are going to be slaughtered in that case, others mistreated for some of the other products we want from them. So how do we get past discriminating against certain animals? Others we would never consider violating them, harming them, and in fact we spend so much money trying to protect them.
So the key thing here is we have to look at our culture. Like you said, some cultures eat dogs, some cultures eat horses, some cultures eat pigs. We in America live in the American culture where essentially it's kind of like brainwashing. We're raised in a certain culture. We're told what to do. We're told which animals we love and which animals we kill. And we never question it. That's the nature of culture. You don't question your culture because you're raised in it. So in order to get any real change, we have to question our culture. Do the values that we were taught in our culture come from truth? Well, when we love some animals and kill others, that's not based on truth, because the animals suffer the same, and nobody gave us the right to inflict pain on these animals. So we have to question our culture. When you question your culture, that's when you'll be on to finding the truth, and you can make decisions that people in the future can look back on and go, that person was ahead of their time. They were willing to look beyond their culture, beyond the propaganda from the industries that were in power in that particular culture, and they were able to say, what's right here? What's really right here? Back in the day when women didn't have the right to vote, were women really so much less intelligent than men that it would be dangerous to allow them to vote? No. But that was the perspective of some, you know, a certain group of people.
By the way, are there other cultures around the world much ahead of us in this process of redefining what our relationship with animals is? Or are we in the vanguard? Is there a society that you can point to where they're farther along on this continuum?
There are a couple of societies that are farther along than us. The Jains. It's more less of a culture and more of a religion. The Jains believe that they are not to inflict suffering on any being. Buddhists also believe this, and so there are groups of people out there that recognize that all animals are sentient, meaning that they can feel pain, they can feel joy, they can form family bonds. And so they're much farther ahead than we are. I believe in America. I believe in the American people to be seekers of truth, to go, what decisions can I make today that tomorrow people are going to go, that was a really great and evolved way of living.
Amy Jean Davis is with us, an animal advocate, founder of LA Animal Save. And there was a groundbreaking study that Tulane did along with the University of Michigan. And it was published recently about meat, dairy, egg consumption. And I think a lot of people would be surprised that it's responsible for nearly 84% of food-related greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. I mean, that's pretty dramatic. I'm wondering, as this political movement for more animal rights, you know, really evolves, what is it that's going to be the defining element to us changing our patterns as a culture, as you say? Is it going to be climate change? Because a lot of people are attributing a lot of our excesses to the way we raise our animals and slaughter them. Is it going to be kind of a social injustice piece? Or is it going to be that there are so many bad practices in the agricultural space as it relates to these industrial farms that we're going to get so piqued about that, so upset about that? Is there any one of these areas that you think is going to be dominant in the political conversation we have about these issues?
I think in the political conversation, it's definitely going to be driven by climate change. Now, I know we have a president who doesn't believe climate change is real, but the science says otherwise. So I think climate change is going to drive this conversation. And we're starting to see a little bit of the people in power, the people in places, in roles of authority and education are starting to acknowledge that when it takes 2,500 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef, and 25 pounds of grain to produce 1 edible pound of beef, we are horridly misusing our natural resources, which increases greenhouse gases, water pollution, and water usage, and so on. So I think climate change is going to be the driving conversation regarding the change in our diet. I would like to see ethics as the main reason why we're changing our diets, but I'll take whatever comes along first. But from my perspective, most people, especially in the political arena, are talking about climate change. And you cannot talk about climate change without recognizing that animal agriculture is one of the biggest drivers. Now, we can look at factory farming as the big bad guy, but when you actually compare resource usage from pasture-raised, say, cows versus factory-farmed cows, factory farming per output of, like, calorie output actually takes less natural resources to produce.
Hmm. Okay, well,
but the fact,
go on. I don't want to really get too deeply into that, but it is one of those issues. I mean, just certain levels of mistreatment based upon the fact that you're trying to increase the efficiency and the output. And I think many of us have seen what we've tried to do with steroids and the like over the years. So that's an issue, certainly, that is among the many being considered in this. But I do want to go back to this issue of animal welfare versus animal rights. And so somebody who says, well, I really do care about animals, but I'm not ready to change my entire lifestyle. So you've got the welfare proponents who believe that maybe it's still acceptable to kill animals as long as it's not overtly cruel, versus those who think, no, animal rights are animal rights, and they have a right to exist separate and apart as a living being, and they were put here by whatever plan there was to make certain that we could all coexist and you know, be important elements in the whole ecosystem. Where is the debate, if there is a schism in the movement today between animal rights and animal welfare? Where do you think that schism lies? And are we moving along that line more toward animal rights, but we're still kind of in the animal welfare phase?
I think we're certainly still in the animal welfare phase, just from looking at it from a consumer perspective. Like I mentioned, the cage-free, free-range marketing terms that are on so many products. So I think consumers are definitely in the animal welfare part of it. But the big difference between animal welfare and animal rights is people who are welfarists, who believe in animal welfare, don't believe that these animals deserve to live not as property. They believe, you know, those animals are for me to use. I'm going to use them, quote unquote, nicely, but they're for me to use. And of course, people, the animal rights activists believe the animals are not property of others. So consumer wise, most people are animal welfare. They believe that animals, the, you know, overwhelming majority of Americans believe animal cruelty is wrong. Now, the much smaller portion of people are animal rights activists, such as myself. But luckily, the message that we're trying to spread, the education we're trying to give people, if you cut down on using animals in any way, it's an overall positive result for the environment, for the oppressed workers in the slaughterhouses and factory farms, and of course for the animals. So these animal, the large amount of people that are animal welfarists who still believe we can use animals, I think that that we need to have that before we can move to everybody being on the side of animal rights.
Now, I know there was Rob Bishop, who's a congressman from Utah, and he made a very public pronouncement. He said, if the Green New Deal goes through, this will be outlawed. And there he was munching on a cheeseburger. He said, I could no longer eat this type of thing. And Peter Singer, who wrote about a lot of these issues going back to the mid-70s, raised the same issue. We are quite literally gambling with the future of our planet, he wrote way back then, for the sake of hamburgers. Now, I know that you would probably like everybody to be more in the realm of plant-based foods. But, you know, do we have to go that far? And you can give us the benefits, because I know you know what they are, and I'd like you to do that. But do we have to go that far and that quickly, or do we wait for some of the product development of plant-based substitutes to help us along that process? It's almost like weaning yourself off of smoking in many ways, and maybe that's what vaping was meant to do at the beginning. So where do we go along those lines?
Yes, I would like to see everybody eating plant-based foods. And if we weren't in such a climate crisis, I would say we can't force people to change their diet as much as I would like to. I know people think, oh, that's, you know, that's not democracy. Well, democracy needs to do what's best for the people. And in this case, we need to do what's best for the planet. So if we could make laws to cut down on the amount of meat and dairy produced in this country, it's for the benefit of our future generations. And we're not talking hundreds of years in the future, because the way we're behaving right now, we're looking at nearly a 4-degree increase by 2100. And that's basically unlivable. So we're in a climate crisis. We need to do what is necessary so that we actually have a planet to live on. So if there are some drastic legislative moves that can be made, I'm all for it. Like right now, state of California, my group and another group, Animal Hope and Legislation, are trying to get a bill passed to require plant-based food options in all public schools. Mm. You know, and it's like, well, let's give the kids that option. Let's give them that option, and let's teach them about what that means. They're going to cut down on the greenhouse gas emissions. It's a more eco-friendly, water-friendly, every animal-friendly choice. So let's get that into law, requiring public schools to offer that option. So I do believe that there's some legislation that needs to happen, because we don't have a lot of time. We're already past 1-degree increase in the global temperature, and we don't want to go past 2. So I think we need to do some drastic things. It's for the future generations, both human and animal.
And when you make these arguments to young people, and maybe they haven't eaten as much meat as many have in our society, and maybe they're more open to change, what do we hear? Because, I mean, I know you make a really compelling case in some of your writing that it conserves water, it cleans the soil, a vegan diet reduces energy consumption. These are all really rational and compelling arguments. What is it that might reach this next generation? They're the ones probably who are going to make the largest change in the way they eat and consume any animal product or plant-based product, particularly, as you say, if some of these commercial entities are beginning to offer these alternatives. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, luckily, as humans live and exist on this planet, we evolve. Martin Luther King said that the arc of justice is long, but it bends. The arc of human history is long, but it bends towards justice. So these younger generations that are coming up are going to be more ethical and more evolved than a generation before. At least that's what I've seen as history goes. So I believe that these younger kids are going to hear about things like climate change, and they're going to see the footage of the animal cruelty that goes on these farms. They're going to hear the arguments. And what's really great about these younger generations is that they want immediate results. They don't want to wait 20 years to see change. They want change now, which is why we're seeing younger people run for legislative offices and younger people get involved in politics, even though they're too young to really be a representative of any kind. They want change now. So they're going to be willing to look at the science. They're willing to look at the data. They're willing to question what their culture is trying to just get them to do. No longer are we a bunch of mindless soldiers just willing to consume what the industries want us to consume. We want to know, what does this choice how does it impact the environment? How does this choice impact my neighbor? How does this choice impact really, you know, any animal that might suffer? They're asking these questions, and they want to see change here and now. So I believe that these younger generations are only going to cause this shift over from a society that's really built on this foundation of institutionalized violence over to one that's a foundation of compassion and a foundation of, when I make a choice, I know it affects all of these other beings. And so I'm going to make a mindful choice. I believe that they're going to cause the shift to happen faster than we can.
Do you think that the 2020 election in any material way will evidence and open up a lot of these dialogues and conversations? Is this really on the menu of concerns that a lot of politicians, because I have not heard many politicians effectively tie together the way we farm with the crisis in climate. I just haven't heard them do that in a compelling, sustainable way. I just haven't.
And I really haven't either. Unfortunately, part of running for office means, you know, getting donations from the people who have money, and the people who have money are making money off of someone else. And unfortunately, those people that make the money are not out there spreading these conscious choices. They're making money, and it's the meat industry, the dairy industry, the pharmaceutical industry. The meat and dairy industry passed a bill in December, the farm bill that they do every 5 years, and it has $23.5 billion specifically devoted to advertising for the dairy industry. So tax dollars are being used to advertise for the dairy industry with partnerships like with McDonald's and Pizza Hut. And the representatives are heavily influenced by these industries, unfortunately. So the only thing I've heard is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with her Green New Deal that even mentions meat and dairy and cutting down on meat and dairy. So I don't think that the politicians are going to be the ones to lead the change on this. They're going to talk a lot about climate change and a lot about having low flow shower heads and toilets and, you know, green energy, but they're not going to talk a lot about meat and dairy. And that's because the USDA is the largest department of government next to the Pentagon. They have so much power, so much influence, a lot of influence over laws. So it's going to have to be the citizens making this fight heard and be, you know, not be willing to shut up about it and to show up and with their signs saying we need to talk about animal agriculture because it's so much bigger of a contributor to climate change than everything else. So I don't think it's going to come from the politicians, unfortunately. It would be wonderful if they did. I know Cory Booker eats a plant-based diet, and so, you know, that's great. At least, you know, he's seen the information enough to make a change for individually, but I believe it's still going to have to come from the people.
All right. Is animal rights the next frontier for those who are looking to move forward and evolve? That was the question on the table today. Amy Jean Davis, animal advocate, founder of LA Animal Save. If somebody wants to read more, what would you suggest they dig into to understand these issues in a more comprehensive way?
It depends on what avenue they're coming at it. If they want to read more about how animal agriculture affects the environment, well, they can watch a documentary called Cowspiracy. There's lots of smaller books written about how the environment is affected by animal agriculture. There's one called Eat for the Planet. Now, if they want to come at animal agriculture from a health perspective, maybe someone in their life is sick or died from some preventable disease, there is How Not to Die, which is an extensive book talking about how eating animals does cause most of these diseases. And then if they want more information on how they can just get active, especially if it's for the animals, mm-hmm. they can go to our website, laanimalsave.org, and reach out to us. We're a global movement. The Save Movement is in 72 countries around the world, over almost 700 groups. So they can get active with us. They can just reach out, and we can help them.
All right, great. Amy Jean, thank you for being with us today on America Trends.
Thank you so much for having me, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, what's up,
Trent? I've got some exciting news for you.
Well, let's hear it.
We're part of the MHNR Network.
And where can we find that?
That's MHNRnetwork.com.
I'm going there right now.
All right.